We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
You are listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, the station with the city's soul. Continue to listen.
Welcome, welcome. You are listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, and we have now reached the episode of Talkin' Memphis. And I have some wonderful guests with me, straight from the University of Memphis with their MFA program. If you would like to introduce yourself.
My name is Jacob Williams. I am a second-year student over at the U of M. I'm a writer, a fiction writer, and a transplant from St. Louis, so happy to be here in the Mid-South.
Nice, nice. And so we have you guys here today to recite some works that y'all have been working on. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the MFA program at
yes,
the University
indeed.
Of Memphis?
Yes, indeed. So we're all students over there learning how to write creatively, working on many different genres. We're all in different years, but we've been spending our time trying to create the best art we can.
Oh, man, that is wonderful. That is so wonderful. So I guess, I mean, me, myself... me, myself, I don't like to, you know, beat around the bush or anything. So if you want to go ahead and get started, just introduce yourself and, I guess, describe what you are about to recite, and we'll have some fun there. All right, let me turn this music down just a little bit.
Definitely. Thank you for that. So I'm a short story writer myself. Fiction is my trade. Try my best to work with what we're doing here on this planet, what we're doing here in life, trying to figure out, understand why we're here and unpack those really interesting questions. So here's a story I wrote trying to do just that, thinking a lot about family, a lot about how we change from our families. It's called When Everything Was Muddy. Close enough to the Mississippi River, everything breathes twice. Trees lining the riverbank have roots both in the sand and in the old heavy water. Birds fly by looking for the smallest sign of a fish while their reflections hunt for rain in the clouds. Even the sun itself stares back at a brother of unimaginable fire and chaos still trapped in the same dirty muck. I look down at myself in the midst of everything and wonder how it's fair. How often we get to be here twice, taking in two worlds. I'm not alone, though, as some men on a boat holler and drag a large net out of the water and through their other muddy bodies. I know that they are here for the catfish, but from this far, the net could be its own giant creature. A monster the men went out to fight today, and somehow they won. Barely, perhaps, they won. The small, shining boat digs deeper into the water as the net lands heavily inside, and it's cracked open to reveal that it is no monster, at least not for long. The men dig out dozens of catfish, one at a time, wrestling each giant sliver of mud and oil. I can practically taste it from here. Whoops and curses of something unexpected skips across to me as one fish breaks free of the fight. Two of the men dive at the edge of the boat as the fish easily dodges their hands in the air, still swimming wherever it goes. Over the side and straight into the water, the fish cracks out of our world and back into the hidden place, underneath it all. The men yell at each other and then suddenly are back to work. Their quiet fills the air, and the last echo of their noise and of their failure lands heavily at my feet at the same time as some movement. My reflection has changed. Though the deceptively still water remains calm and I am still alone, something new has appeared on its surface. A face I haven't seen in decades. A voice I barely remember, like a belt cracking. It's clear. My cousin Fulton is somehow nine again and looking up at me from the world of the water as he asks, "Why can't I be a catfish, Peter?"
Wow. That was good.
Thank you. It's the first,
that was wonderful.
Just the first page. So that's not,
wow.
But that's a little taste of what I try to do, what I'm trying to do, what we're learning how to do.
Right. That is it, and it is a program at the University of Memphis.
Yes, indeed.
And there are a lot of great people there helping you there. There's a lot of great students there.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I'm not a huge literary person myself, but that was phenomenal. I felt like I was right there.
Thank you so much. I stand on the shoulders of giants. We have some incredible teachers there. Mark Meyer, an incredible fiction writer. Marcus Wick, an incredible poet. Handfuls of others, so many others that we work with. So many students that helped me get to where I currently am. Helped me get even further than I'm hoping to go.
Wow. That's awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to come down here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
To do something like this. This is amazing.
Definitely. I'll pass off the mic.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back into some music real quick, just for a quick break, and then we'll have the next guest come in.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, everybody.
All right. You guys are listening to Talking Memphis right here on the station Raised by Sound, WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis.
WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis, powered by the Crosstown Radio Partnership between the Daily Memphian, Crosstown Concourse, and the University of Memphis.
Disrespecting me. You've dissed me for the last time. Can't you see the things you put me through? On every little thing I try with you. Your silly games lead me to doubt that not
you fly, cause you got me on standby list. I'm tired of you dissing. Don't treat me like I wanna be, for you I'm never gonna be that way. You must think I'm stupid. You play me like Cupid. You think I'm just some dizzy dame blind to your mind game. Be serious, stop disrespecting me. Be a man, you stop neglecting.
That was Tired of You Dissing by Yannick, but we're going to get back to the wonderful readings from these beautiful people from the University of Memphis. And who do we have up next?
Oh, this is Gloria.
Gloria?
It's Gloria Monica from Nairobi.
Oh, wow. And came a long way to here in the city of the music and everything.
Yes, so. The city of music.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to Elvis.
Oh, wow.
So
really?
To Memphis.
Have you been to Graceland yet?
Special. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice place. Yeah. Uh-huh. So what do you have for us to read today?
So one of the things I learned about Memphis when I got here is that Memphis has a tea culture. Mm-hmm. And tea is a very important drink in my country. So I wrote something about tea and yeah. Except the tea I'm talking about is different. We sort of do it with, we brew our tea with milk and cardamoms and all the spices. So yeah, I'm going to be reading something about tea.
All right. All right. Are you ready? You ready to get into it?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. Let's go ahead.
So it's titled Boarding School Days of Whistling and Jen Bronte and Jen Ayers Bronte. And Bronte's Jen Ayer, sorry. So to be in a Kenyan boarding school is to miss your mother's tea. Desperately. It is also to have the worst tea in the world. Tea that is made in the most careless way. Tea that is worse than burnt tea and bad masala tea, because it is cooked without consideration for the milk to water ratio, and of course without any tea spices. At the age of 11, my parents sent my sister and I off to a Catholic girls' boarding school 30 minutes away from home. There's a lot to dislike. The shrill morning preps bells, the endless standing and kneeling at church, the interminable mass celebrations, walking mass, stations of the cross, mathematics prayers, prayer to St. Jude Thaddeus. Yet, the worst of them all was the bad watery tea that the cooks and matrons served us at break time every day. This is how it happened. The break time bell would ring and, famished, we, the students, would run past the manicured academic paddocks and trimmed bougainvillea hedges into the huge dining hall to get tea. But first, we had to sit on the tables and close our eyes, and then Beverly, the dining hall prefect, would lead us in a prayer. Bless us, O Lord, and this thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy goodness through Christ our Lord. I hated the hypocrisy of the prayer. The overdiluted tea was surely no gift, and Christ's goodness was most certainly not invoked when the cook carelessly poured gallons of water and a little milk into a rusty metal pot, set it to boil, threw in cupfuls of tea leaves, and then made the most transparent, most watery tea in the world. It gets worse. On weekdays, this tea would be taken without an accompaniment, a concept we referred to as whistling. The canteen was small and overcrowded, and as a result, it was impossible to successfully buy mandazi from Isabel, the tiny wasted shop attendant who sauntered and wasted time with each order, and thus served only a handful of pupils before the master on duty appeared with his huge cane and terrible moustache and chased us off to the dining hall. Whistling made us hungrier because the tea, dilute and without enough sugar, didn't fill our stomachs at all. The after-meal prayers were therefore bitter mumblings, during which we pretended to give thanks to God for thy benefits, which we received from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen. On Sunday mornings, we prayed loudly and meant every word of the before meals and after meals prayer, because on Sundays, we each received a quarter loaf of bread to eat with the tea. It is no wonder then that I never struggled to wake up on Sundays. I did not even wait for the shrill morning bell. Instead, I would sneak up before the bell rang and tiptoe through the long dormitory hallway, past sleeping girls and into the bathrooms where I quickly showered and ran back to water to wear my checkered uniform and then lay on the bed fully dressed, just waiting for the breakfast bell so that I would go and get my cup of tea. I would jump up, spread my pink bed cover over my little bed, and together with other early risers, run to the dining hall. The idea was to get to the table first and check the size of one's bread, and if it was too small, quickly exchange it with a tablemate's bigger loaf. We didn't care about the punishments we'd receive if we got caught by the teacher on duty. The thrill of having the thickest, most succulent quarter loaf of bread was stronger than the obscure punishment from the deputy head. We, however, exchanged the bread swiftly in order to avoid being caught by the owner of the bread, who was likely to get into a physical fight that could lead to losing both bread and tea.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so just those are boarding school days, a reflection. It's part of a memoir I'm writing about my sort of my boarding school days. Yeah.
I love how the tea is sort of like this sort of religious kind of aspect to it. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, it's a big deal. It's actually what we would call the national drink in Kenya.
Oh.
So it's served everywhere. Even at home when you have guests, the first thing you have to serve them is tea.
Oh, wow.
So you have tea in the morning, and even in the evening before you go to bed. So tea is a big deal in Kenya, and you cannot come to my house to visit without, like, you have to have a cup of tea before you leave. So it's a big deal.
Yeah. And I love that you don't like watery tea either.
Mm-mm.
Like, mm-mm.
It has
no,
to have
I need some flavor.
Oh, and it needs to have cardamoms and masala and all these other spices.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay. Yeah, well, that was wonderful. And that was really good.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
So I guess we'll get back into the music. And thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And we'll get back into the music and we'll get the next person up.
Right.
All right. Thank you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis, powered by the Crosstown Radio Partnership between the Daily Memphian, Crosstown Concourse, and the University of Memphis.
WYXR is brought to you by Iris Collective. When art stirs the soul, community grows. More than performances, Iris Collective is a catalyst for artistic collaboration, education, and experiences across Memphis. Learn more at iriscollective.org and see music transform. Buster's Liquors and Butcher is proud to support WYXR, featuring the three-chord Backstage Series whiskey, custom blends created in collaboration with each artist, featuring Lucero, Dinosaur Jr., the Cadillac 3, and more. More information at bustersliquors.com. In celebration of 25 years of sharing stories and supporting the dreams of our customers, Independent Bank is proud to support the diverse programming of WYXR that reflects and lifts up our community. More information regarding how iBank can help you work toward your financial dreams at i-bankonline.com. Member FDIC.
Church House Memphis Plan continues its decades-long commitment to serving local musicians with comprehensive health care and also tailors its focus to small business owners and the self-employed. Health care through the Memphis Plan provides care in Memphis for Memphians. Related services include preventative health, optometry, dental care, and more. More information regarding availability at memphisplan.org or at 901-272-PLAN.
Here at WYXR, you aren't listening to DJs syndicated from outside of Memphis. There's no playlist that is programmed based on what songs are hot right now. Our music reflects the taste of real people because real people pick it in real time. Donate to support their ability to represent real Memphians through music. Visit WYXR.org now.
All right, you are listening to Talkin' Memphis right here on WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis. And I have a few students from the University of Memphis with me that are part of the MFA program. And who's up next?
Hi, my name's Caitlin, and I am a third-year student. I'm in my final semester at the university, actually, so I will be graduating if I pass all the right things. I will be graduating in May, so fingers crossed.
All right. Well, congratulations for when you do graduate, because you know we've all been there. We gotta keep going. Gotta keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, what do you have for us today?
So I'm going to be reading a couple pages out of a first draft of my novel that I am working on, and so this is the final project that I've put together for my thesis that I will be defending in 2 weeks, actually.
All right.
So I'm just reading a little snippet of it, but yeah.
All right, you ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The first time I saw number one Ruby Court, I thought it looked nothing like the photos my newly wedded husband had shown me. It was the same building, sure, but the lighting was all wrong. In the photos I'd spent weeks studying online, yellow light cascaded down the burnt orange brick, and there were rolling hills in the background, and there'd been a cherry blossom tree, pink and puffy, in the front yard. But after a long drive up an impossibly windy road through Morris Chapel, Isaac finally pulled into Ruby Court, and to my surprise, I saw none of those things. Pine trees stretched up to the sky behind the house. I could see nothing past them. There were no rolling hills. The sun struggled to pierce through the thicket, and there was nothing left of the cherry blossom tree but the stump. "What is it, Dora? What is it, Dora?" Isaac said, gently pulling me to him and kissing the top of my head. "You don't look very happy. I thought you said this was your dream house." I stared into his bright hazel eyes. A little black freckle marked the iris of his right eye, which seemed more green than brown at the moment. It was one of those small things about him that I'd fallen in love with, simply because it was uniquely him, like the scar, still shiny and pink, across the top of his hand. A cooking accident from years ago, he'd once told me. A knife had slipped from his mom's hand and landed in his, sticking straight up. It was nothing serious. Superficial, he'd said. I'd memorized every divot of that scar. "I do like it. It's just a little different," I said. "Really, a little small for your taste." He arched his eyebrow. I rolled my eyes and bumped him lightly with my hip. He stumbled back and laughed. "Hey, come here. I'm sorry. Tell me, please, what don't you like? I want to know." I accepted his apology and placed his arm back around my shoulders. "I know you told me we weren't moving into a normal neighborhood, that it was more private. I wanted that too, but he pushed impatiently. You didn't mention just how far away we are from town, I said. Our house, Victorian and dark, sat at the head of the cul-de-sac, and our two neighbors' homes, modern split levels with white siding wrapped all the way around, were the only other residences I'd seen during the 15-minute trek up the hill known as Coffee Landing, as Isaac informed me after my second, "Are we there yet?" There were no cars in either driveway. Everyone appeared to be out at the moment, which was mildly disappointing. I'd have loved to have been able to talk to someone more familiar with Morse Chapel for a bit. The house I was now to call home seemed to be from another time. The old brick had chipped away in many places, particularly around the four points of the house. It had a stone staircase that led to the front door and was two stories tall with ivy wrapped around the navy window shutters that traveled up and disappeared into the gutters. "It's okay. It's perfectly understandable that you would be nervous. This is our first home together," Isaac said, rubbing my shoulder with the edge of his thumb. "This is where our lives can finally begin." He tilted my chin back and brushed his fingertips down the side of my neck, and my heart rate calmed. I took a deep breath, and when I looked into his eyes, I smiled and believed what he said. This was our beginning.
Wow. Wow, and these are students at the University of Memphis, y'all. This is awesome. This is so awesome. Again, thank you so much for coming.
Yes, thank
you. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Almost fitting for Valentine's Day, honestly. Yeah, that was amazing. And so you said this was your first draft?
Yeah, this is a first draft.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much. I guess we'll get back into the music and we'll have our final guest here. In the meantime, y'all keep in tune to WYXR 91.7 FM, Memphis.
Direction.
You are listening to Talking Memphis right here on WYXR 91.7 FM, and I am here with some MFA students from the University of Memphis, and we have one more student here. If you would like to introduce yourself.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me. My name is Josh, Joshua Carlucci. I'm a second year MFA candidate at U of M. My focus is creative nonfiction. I also write for the Daily Memphian and Edible Memphis in Town.
Wow. And I just heard recently off the air, this has been published?
Yeah. So I'm reading an excerpt from my memoir that I turned into a flash essay. It's forthcoming in Read Divider Mag that's based at Emerson College in Boston.
So oh, wow.
This will be in the next issue.
That's amazing. Well, we can get right into it, and we'll have this excerpt here whenever you're ready.
Yeah, for sure. So, this is called New Appalachia. It is a little braided essay about my hometown where I grew up called Los Banos in Central California. They call us New Appalachia. In 2005, the Congressional Research Service released a book-length report that decided we aren't much different from the proverbial mountain people on the eastern seaboard. We're a bit darker in color, though. We, San Joaquin Valley, California. We valley folk are dope sick, hooked on an industry that's trying to kill us, the only industry keeping us alive. The Appalachians have the mines. We have the fields. The San Joaquin Valley contains six of the top 10 United States farming counties: Fresno, Tulare, Kern, Stanislaus, San Joaquin, and Merced. We, the fields. Without the fields, my great-grandparents would have died in Italy. Without the fields, the San Joaquin's river fecund roar would shake the Buckeye limbs unbridled. We, who bend the water. In 2016, the Daily Mail reported that 250,000 Central Valley residents were at excessive risk of nitrate exposure through drinking water. Nitrates from fertilizer, nitrates in cow shit, nitrates that make the verdant almond trees reach for the fat yellow sun, nitrates that grow bone-white cotton, the world's dirtiest crop, nitrates that seep into the alluvium, nitrates that poison the well, nitrates that turn babies blue and made women miscarry. The Congressional Research Service found that in Merced County, which contains my hometown, Los Banos, 37% of births occurred with no or late prenatal care. We, who carry water from the well. The Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta is one of the most important irrigation sources for San Joaquin Valley agriculture, producing hundreds of millions of dollars in cash crops every year. It is also home to a small species of fish known as the Delta smelt, a creature whose population has been diminished because of a reduction in fresh water to the estuary. It is said the well-being of the smelt is that of the entire ecosystem. California, seemingly in a constant state of drought, relies on what little water it has for the survival of everything. Since 1993, when the Delta smelt were declared threatened under the Endangered Species Act, there's been a constant battle between farmers and the state about the allocation of the Delta's limited fresh water, which both the fish and the crops will die without. At Easter in the early 2000s, my cotton farming uncles would stand in a circle in Nani's backyard, smoking cigars and drinking Budweiser. Four buckets of minnows, my great uncle would say. The Democrats want to kill us. What came first, the fish or the farmer? In Dos Palos, one town over from Los Banos in Merced County, a long stretch of dirt and pavement is named Carlucci Road, is intersected by weaving networks of delta canals and drains, is where my uncles stole the road signs from their posts to display in their garages, is where I, too, pulled the entire signpost from its wet January soil gums and pitched it on the bed of my truck. Carlucci Road. One of the signs stands close to where my great uncle planted his rows of cotton. Carlucci Road. The road signs that bear our surname belong to the state of California. Carlucci Road. Our only semblance of permanence. We remove our expendability from the earth as we see fit. We, sand walking valley, wobbling in the foggy mud that holds our souls on the ground. We, the earth's loose teeth. In 2005, on the bank of the canal behind our house that wasn't ours, I ripped my first fish from the earth. I caught it with a minnow I netted from the canal. It was a thick-whiskered channel catfish whose mouth croaked into the air that suffocated it while it writhed airborne from the fishing line. I asked my mother if we should eat it for dinner that night so she wouldn't have to go grocery shopping. She cut the hook loose from its mouth and threw it back into the canal. As of 2022, in Merced County, over 19% of the population lives in poverty. Over 22% of children are impoverished. Over 24% of people live in severe housing situations. We, fickle fiends tied over on toil beneath the bruise-colored sky. We, fickle fish. Over 80% of farm workers in the San Joaquin Valley are undocumented Mexicans who live in the shadowy terror of La Migra, otherwise known as Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, whose sole mission is to deport them. Without undocumented Mexican labor, California's agriculture industry would collapse to its knees. As I write these words, California is the world's fifth largest economy, behind Japan in fourth and India in sixth. We, the breadbasket. In 2014, on the bank of the canal where I caught the catfish behind our house that wasn't ours, my friend Jonas and I worked the chop saw against the 15-foot metal post, the Muscovy ducks scattering at the sound of grinding and sparking metal. With the forceps, I wrenched the Carlucci Road sign from the intersecting Hutchins Road sign. I mounted my sign that wasn't mine in our garage that wasn't ours like my uncles did before me. We, the road less traveled. We, the road less. We, the road. In 2021, my great-uncle died of lung cancer. Doctors said it was the cigars, but I think it was the cotton. He worked the fields till he quit breathing. When you see your name on something green like a road sign, it feels like money. When you see your name on something you didn't write, you feel like the world that never was, will, that never will be, was always yours to begin with. I imagine there too are green road signs in Appalachia, signs that read the surnames of the families who bore the first holes in the earth, signs that stand before the mines that took the lungs of someone's daddy who had the same damn name as the one on the sign.
Wow. That was very provoking. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a lot of emotions that went through me.
appreciate
oh man.
That.
Yeah, that was amazing. You said that's being published?
Yeah, it's forthcoming in Redivider magazine, in the next issue in the spring.
Wow. So. And these are amazing people, and they have brought in some amazing works. And it's straight out of the University of Memphis, straight from the MFA program. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I just wanted to say that our applications for the MFA are open. They close on March 1st. We are a small but mighty cohort, and we have some lovely faculty, some lovely students, and just an incredible opportunity. And one of the best decisions that I made in my life, and I'm sure I could speak for everyone else here and say the same for them. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And for other people mm-hmm. like yourself and like everyone that's in this room right now, how would they be able to apply for this grant?
Yeah, you can access the application totally online. You just need a few letters of recommendation, you know, your transcripts from undergrad.
Right.
And the most important is your writing sample. So we have three genres that you can apply to: poetry, fiction, and nonfiction.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming. Thank you to everybody who's come here. And thank you guys that are listening right here on WYXR, that's listening to these wonderful people who have produced these wonderful works that are still, you know, they're still working on them, and they're probably not going to start working. They're going to keep that grind up, and that's what we're about. Yeah.
For sure. Thank you so much.
Right. So check us out online at WYXR.org and keep the dial right here on 91.7 FM Memphis.
The Dorothy Day House will host Dinner with Dorothy on Sunday, March 24th, an evening to celebrate the successes of families who have transitioned into stable housing. The event will include a happy hour, seated dinner, silent auction, and live entertainment. All proceeds benefit the Dorothy Day House. More information at dorothydaymemphis.org. The Onstage at the Halloran Center season presents the Memphis Songwriter Series, hosted by Mark Egger Stewart. Mark and his musical guests take audiences on a journey behind the music, sharing personal stories and introducing new works. The fourth event of the season is Thursday, March 14th, and will feature Aaron James, Hope Claiborne, and Madeline Collins. More information at orpheum-memphis.com.
A pledge to WYXR does more than keep great music on the airwaves. Your gift provides a place for real people who occupy all of the distinct sides of this community to be together and celebrate music. That is one of the things that WYXR is good at, bringing people together. We want you to be here with us because we're stronger together. Join WYXR and donate online.
Hello, this is Jerry, your host of Without a Net. Here on WYXR Sunday nights from 8 to 10, we're going to be hearing some pure jazz and some impure jazz and lots of other good music too. Come join me this Sunday. See you later.
Your command.